You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I'm looking on our bracket challenge, the celebrity bracket challenge. John Daly is leading comfortably. Seton O'Connor and Jim Parsons are second. Kevin Frazier from Entertainment Tonight, he's third on the list. Todd Fritz, Mr. Conservative, Captain Obvious, is fourth, tied with DC the Brain Supreme. McLovin is fifth on the list here. So the Dan Patrick Show is well represented. You have to go down to ninth to find Dan Patrick. Paulie Papp's making a late push. He's tied for 11th there, but it's interesting. Interesting there. Seton O'Connor, if Michigan had gone and won last night, he would have had... Would you have had all four in the Final Four?
Yeah, all four.
Look at you. Look at you, Mr. College Band. Who needs Jay Billis?
Yeah, I mean, you got me, right?
Yeah.
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 I can break it down.
Yeah, Paul.
Elon Musk tied for 22nd.
No, Elon Musk is not in the Celebrity Bracket Challenge.
Oh.
Why isn't he, Todd?
We asked.
Did you reach out to Elon?
I left him off the list.
Okay. This program brought to you by Simply Safe Home Security. If you have 30 free minutes, you never have to worry about a break-in at your home ever again. This is how quick it is to set up the security system with Simply Safe. Go to simplysafedan.com today. Customize your system. Free security camera. Poll question, play of the day, stat of the day, all of that coming up. Say good morning to those watching on Peacock and those listening on our great radio affiliates around the country, numbering nearly 200 cities. Gonzaga is going to have to buck the trend to become the first undefeated NCAA champ since Indiana in 1976. But so far, the Bulldogs have lived up to the hype and then some. Last night, they put on a clinic against USC, advancing to the Final Four. And there's so many things that they do right. First of all, they're unselfish. They move without the ball. They move the ball. They play defense. Like, these are just normal things that you would expect out of a great team. But you don't always get those. You know, when you start to check the boxes, not everybody does this. You see what Gonzaga does, and if you're old enough to remember Pete Carril at Princeton, he had this motion offense. They were usually undersized, outmanned when they would face better teams. But Pete Carril was really a brilliant tactician. And it's movement, constantly moving, backdoor cuts. But you do that, and you have all of this talent. Princeton had to do that out of necessity, and they nearly upset Georgetown in the NCAA tournament. Gonzaga has a ton of talent, may have the number one pick in the draft. You know, they're not a mid-major. They get talent. They get big names, and they should be viewed that way. But, you know, I think that we used to look at them as that school, the small school, well-coached, but this is supposed to be their coronation here. This has been a long time in the making with what Mark Few has done. You know, Butler nearly did this twice. Brad Stevens then moved on. Mark Few didn't leave. And there are a couple of times I remember interviewing him on the show in the last 20 years where, hey, you're up for that job. I thought he was going to take the UCLA job many, many years ago. But he stayed. And he's reaping the benefits of that. The last time to enter the tournament out without a loss, that was Kentucky back in 2015. That team had Carl Anthony Towns and Devin Booker. They didn't win the title. Lost to Frank Kaminsky and the Badgers in the Final Four. The year before, it was Fred Van Vliet and Wichita State. They came in undefeated. They fell to Kentucky. Before that, you have to go back to the 1991 UNLV team, who famously lost to Duke. But Gonzaga doesn't seem burdened by history. That's a confident team. They look poised to chase perfection next week in Indianapolis. And if you're wondering about the matchups on Saturday, it'll be Houston and Baylor, the battle for Texas. That's at 5 Eastern, UCLA and the Zags at 8:30 on Saturday. Houston has only beaten double-digit seeds in the tournament. They haven't faced a team that is a single-seeded team yet. They will now with number one Baylor. But we'll look at those matchups coming up. McLovin, you got a poll question for me?
Yeah, this is super mean, but how do you feel about this Final Four? Meh? I guess Gonzaga is interesting, or meh? Honestly, is anybody excited about this group? Wow. I'm sorry, I just have to say it. Houston, Baylor, Gonzaga, and ghost of UCLA?
Yeah, but compared to what we had last year, which was nothing, like we should be grateful, thankful. It's like, you know, when we had the NBA in the bubble and people said, oh, there's no fans. It's not the same. And I said, well, it's either you can have some basketball or not have basketball.
But you had LeBron in the bubble. That was awesome. This is Baylor, Houston.
When you're hungry, do you go, I don't know if I want to eat. If there's only one restaurant, do you go, I don't know. I think I'd rather be hungry. This is history here. No, you may go, I don't care about these teams, or they're not exciting teams. I do. But if Gonzaga has a chance to go undefeated, or you get a surprise, or if Baylor knocks them off, if UCLA continues this crazy madness, goes to the finals. I mean, that's the beauty of this. The storylines, it's so improbable that UCLA has the play-in game. So you go from the first four to the final four. That's never happened. Michigan had a great storyline with Juwan Howard. But, you know, that's what we love about this. There's storylines that you would never think could emerge here. And they do. And then you fall in love with that storyline. And you flirt with it. It's I love that storyline, and it lasts 2 weeks. And then you move on. Or it dies. But, you know, with Gonzaga, this has been start to finish. Now, nobody's surprised how great Gonzaga – they shouldn't be surprised how great Gonzaga is. Baylor, I think, if Baylor does go to the title game, Baylor might surprise some people at just how good they are. But Gonzaga has been on display, been talked about, and rightfully so. They are worthy of whatever praise they get. Now, you're going to have people who are going to say, well, how would they have fared against this team? That team that won a national title, the Indiana team, you know, okay, I understand all of those things. We make these arguments, but that's what's fun about this. You can make your case. You know, how would they fare against a junior or senior laden Indiana team in the mid-70s? I have no idea. We can discuss. You know, would they have beaten Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in UCLA? We can discuss. I just enjoy what I see. This is really good basketball. Yes, McClellan.
This is objectively not good basketball.
Gonzaga is really good basketball.
Right, they are.
Yes.
The other teams are defense teams. I mean, UCLA Michigan was objectively, by any measurement, not well-played basketball.
No, it was not. No, and Michigan crumbled there in the last 2 minutes, the last 30 seconds. Why they're jacking up threes when you need a two? Get to the hoop. You need one. Get to the hoop. They didn't. Yeah, Paul.
That was a tough part at the end of the Michigan game. They needed one, and they didn't take it to the hole. And the other, I think they were in the bonus, you know. That's got to be frustrating. But do you guys like the style of men's basketball in college or pro better? College seems more old school. They shoot a lot of threes, but it's not exclusively threes. I think the style's way better in college.
Yeah. Well, you have different styles, it feels like, in college. By the way, Fritzy just corrected me. UCLA, the second team ever to go from first four to the final four. VCU was Shaka Smart back in 2011. Thank you, Todd, for keeping me straight there. What else do we have, McClellan?
Pro day question.
All right.
Again, I'm going to go snarky. The most overrated NFL thing, the preseason, the combine, pro days, or the Pro Bowl?
Well, I don't think the Pro Bowl is rated.
Right. They're not overrated because nobody likes it. You're right.
You'd probably surprise people if you said they're still doing it. So I can't say it's overrated. It's not rated.
Wait, that's a good question. Are they still doing it? I know there's 17 games, but I didn't hear about the fate of the Pro Bowl.
Remember for the last 10 years, we were supposed to invest in player safety? Like it was up to us that we were supposed to care as fans and members of the media. Player safety, CTE. All of those things that we did care about, we do care about, we were interested. And then all of a sudden, the great elixir, money. Yeah. So I don't want to hear about player safety anymore. If you don't care, they don't care, then why are we supposed to care? Everybody agreed on 17. Everybody got more money, right? So don't tell me about player safety. Hopefully you improve the helmets. What you're allowed to do with your helmet, but don't say it's your priority. Player safety is not your priority. It's about making money. It's always about making money. Yes, Todd.
One less preseason game, so they care a little bit about.
Oh, that's true.
Now it's all equal.
Yes, McLovin.
Don't the starters barely play in the preseason now anyway? I felt like that was a false narrative by the NFL.
It is true, but they, you know, we're going to get to 18 regular season games at some point, but nobody complained about 17. I think Alvin Kamara did. That's about it.
He's got to play 16 games first.
But, okay, we got 17 games, and everybody's like, yeah, great. Like, all we want is football. We don't invest in you as a person. You're just, you know, it's all transferable. Like, that guy's out. Now this guy comes in. That guy's out. This guy comes in. Next guy up. That's how it works. Nobody's sitting here going, gosh, I hope Jim McMahon's doing well today. Nobody's doing that. These other players, why they didn't go, hey, you know what? We have 16. Why don't we go to 15? Why don't we go to 14? That would make it safer, right? You know, this is apples and oranges. But NASCAR didn't have cars slow down. NASCAR has softer walls in a Hans device. They don't want to go 130. They, you know, they want you going at 200 miles an hour. So do they make it safer? Yeah, but they still want you going really, really fast. But the NFL with 17 games, all right, go ahead. Full speed ahead. More fantasy, more gambling. Yeah, more money. Yeah, Seton.
Feels like we're entering the load management era of NFL with all these games. I'm going to sit this week 9 out and give myself a break.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that, if there is load management. Yeah, McLevin?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you were worried about the quality of play by week 17 or 18.
Well, I was always worried about what that week 17, that 17th game meant. What are the matchups there? And as long as you're able to keep our interest, because sometimes you have a team that wins its division by, you know, three games, and then they end their season with a game against the Jets, and then you go, okay, that doesn't matter. And you might have a couple of those games, weeks 16 and 17. Plus, the Cowboys can't go 8-8. You know, it's just, it's not 8-8-1, they could. Yes, Todd?
By adding playoff spots, at least that maybe decreases it a little bit. There's still a chance that some games could be totally meaningless, but maybe it's somewhat less by week 17.
Yeah, but then we're adding more than the regular season doesn't mean as much. I mean, these are all the arguments I hear, like college football. Oh, the regular season doesn't mean anything. You know, if you put in 8 teams or 16 teams, okay. But that's where we're headed. Remember gambling? Gambling, the big evil. Oh, we don't even talk about gambling. Don't even talk about the odds. Okay. Now, doesn't matter. All out in the open. Because everybody realized, as I said for many years, when they figure out how they all make their money, then we're going to have this. How do we make our, how much we make? Oh, that gamble. Yes. Okay. 10 years, like what happened 10 years ago? You were philosophically against gambling. Like, what happened?
Ching, ching, ching.
Yeah, exactly. Ching, 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 ching. Yeah. You know, player safety. What happened? Ching, 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 ching. Like, that's what it is. All right. What else do you have, McLovin? Then we'll take a break here, and we'll talk about the pro days with Mac Jones and Justin Fields. I said it. I firmly believe it because I was told by a source. And I've said it the last couple of weeks. Teams are overthinking Justin Fields. This is prior to the pro day. Because as my source said, he did everything you want him to do. Did he have bad games? Yes. Did he come back and have a great game against Clemson? Did he play hurt? Did he have 6 touchdown passes? Like, we already know what he can do. But because he ran a 4.440 and he was throwing passes to guys who were, you know, not covered by anybody, all of a sudden, I saw this in a New York paper. Should the Jets be reconsidering Zach Wilson at number 2? And I went, did you watch Justin Fields play at all when guys were actually trying to tackle him? When the guys played defense? I think Justin Fields was around too long. I think it hurts that he went to Ohio State and there's a track record, a recent track record with their quarterbacks not being as good as advertised. But I didn't see anything yesterday that changed my opinion of Justin Fields. I think he's has incredible potential here to be a starting quarterback and a good starting quarterback. Do I think he'll be great? I have no idea. But If you look at Trey Lance, and we don't know as much about Trey Lance, and you have teams probably saying they put him up there higher. Like, Mac Jones overthrew a couple of guys yesterday, so now he's not what the Niners want? What did he do in games? That's what I want to know. Yes, McLovin.
So what does a 4.4 40 mean? And by the way,
he's fast. Okay.
Can we stop with the pro day 40s? Everybody set records of these pro days. Come on. We know a tenth of a second. I translate 4.4 to 4.54 at the combine. I'm sorry. I just don't believe these pro days.
All right. That's fine. You can do that.
These 4.4 makes him like, you know, that's like the fastest receiver in the NFL. And he weighs 220 pounds.
It goes back to what we say every time at the combine or a pro day. Don't read too much into it. That's all. Just hopefully you look at the tape. What's on that tape? You talk to people. What kind of student of the game is he? Does he hang out with the wrong people? Like, you do your due diligence here. That's all. You overthink it or you underthink it. Yeah, Paul.
If you're Mac Jones, you refuse to do the 40. Just say, the only 40 I'm running is when I run down and congratulate my wide receiver on a long touchdown pass. Time that.
All of a sudden, he didn't look good yesterday. Oh, did you see Belichick? He was shaking his head. Oh, my God. What? I don't know what that meant. I don't know. Now, all of a sudden, what? The Patriots aren't getting Mac Jones, are they? I thought Mac Jones was going to the Niners. Now he's not? What did Kyle Shanahan think? He overthrew that wide-open wide receiver there. Yes, McLeod.
I've heard a lot of, why did the Niners trade up to number 3 for Mac Jones when they could have traded up to some other number? I don't know if you've heard that. Like, a lot of people are like, well, did you really have to go to 3 to get Mac Jones? That's a big question out there.
If it's Mac Jones. Like, it's weird. It seems so obvious. And maybe they take Mac Jones. No. My intel says that Trey Lance is the, you know, the player that interests them. But I, you know, that's one person telling me. So I don't know. It didn't feel like Mac, you had to go all the way up there to get Mac Jones. I agree. But as I told you, it was like last week, and I said, hey, this is what I'm getting told. People love, capital letters, love Mac Jones moving up. And I went, okay. And then we realized San Francisco needed to move up to get whoever their quarterback is. Maybe that is Mac Jones. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, like a few years ago, at the end of March, we never would have thought that you would have to move up to 1 to get Baker Mayfield. Like, it feels like that. Remember? Like,
yeah.
Guys fly up at the end.
Yes, because nobody is going to tell you the truth. There's no reason to tell you the truth. There's a lot of reasons to lie to you. And that's what happens here. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, 3-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you can get your podcast.
Matt joined ESPN in February and contributes across several shows, including Get Up, NFL Live, and he joins us on the program. All right, Matt, so we're not supposed to read too much into these pro days, but everybody's reading into these pro days. You want to start with Mac Jones and his disappointing pro day or Justin Fields with his unbelievable pro day?
Yeah, Dan, I've been doing this long enough to know that these things really don't matter. They just give us something to talk about in the month of March. You know, it's like there's a little bit of tournament is starting to die down. Let's talk about pro days. Let's get excited about guys throwing in shorts or running 40s when that doesn't really matter, like you said. So I don't know that I want to put too much into Mac Jones overthrowing a couple passes and Bill Belichick shaking his head or Kyle Shanahan looking bored, as opposed to Justin Fields and who was there, who wasn't there. I would hope that in a time where we should be better at evaluating quarterbacks than we've ever been before, we would go back to who was actually good from Labor Day to New Year's Day. And to me, that was Justin Fields. And he's done it for 2 years, never losing a game in the Big Ten. Zach Wilson is impressive. I was at the Pro Day Friday. He is impressive. Probably the most fun quarterback prospect to watch this year. But He did it in the Mountain West in a weak schedule. And if you go back to 2019, 11 touchdowns to 9 interceptions when he actually had to play someone from the Pac-12, which is like the fifth best football conference. So I'm not all in on the pro days mattering that much. Hopefully it just reminds people who these players actually are.
What are your quarterback rankings right now?
Yeah, well, Trevor Lawrence is one. I'm not dumb enough to argue against that. I have Justin Fields number two, which is funny because these two have been competing for that top spot since they were sophomores in high school. Then I would say that Zach Wilson and Trey Lance are very comparable in terms of there's a lot of wow factor there, but there's a lot of boom or bust potential because we haven't seen them do this against decent competition even. And it's small sample sizes with Trey Lance. Then I have Mac Jones fifth. I know he's the belle of the ball right now, and we got the Tom Brady comparisons out there. That's wild to me that we're going to do that for a guy who's played 17 games at Alabama. He's never not thrown to a first rounder at wide receiver. He's got an all world offensive line in front of him, a first round running back, and an offensive coordinator good enough to get the Texas head coaching job. So it's just hard to look at that and not feel a little Mitch Trubisky-ish 1 year. And we're blown away by the football IQ and the upside. And we forget to actually watch what these guys can do at the position.
Okay. Do you think the Niners moved up to get Mac Jones?
Absolutely, I do. Which, as a lifelong Niners fan, that's such a punch to the stomach. And I'm trying to trust John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. But I remember when they said they didn't need a quarterback and they passed on Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson only to pick up C.J. Beathard in the third round. It's like I'm still a little gun shy about trusting this front office. And this just feels like something they would do. They would overthink it again, just like trading back to get Solomon Thomas or drafting Reuben Foster in the first round. It feels like this front office is a little too cute sometimes.
But Matt, did the Niners have to do this to get Mac Jones?
They didn't have to go to 3, Dan. I don't think they did. Now, maybe to 7, maybe to 6, which we saw that pick get traded already. But I don't think you needed to go from 12 to 3 to get Mac Jones. I don't think the Atlanta Falcons with Arthur Smith is going to look at Mac Jones and be like, coming from Ryan Tannehill, that's the quarterback I want. I feel like the Falcons would be all in on Justin Fields, who's a local kid, Trey Lance, who has great athleticism, throws a beautiful deep ball, if they even go quarterback. The Bengals aren't drafting a quarterback at 5. The Eagles weren't going to at 6. So the Niners had other options. So my hope and prayer, as someone who's still a little bit of a 49ers fan, is that that is a move for Justin Fields. And I would say that even as an unbiased evaluator. Kyle Shanahan, I understand, loves Matt Ryan and Kirk Cousins. Look at who's beat you. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson. What do they all have in common? And it's mobility. Not that Mac Jones is a statue back there, but you want plus-level mobility. Justin Fields ran a 4.4 at 230 pounds and has a great arm. I don't understand why they would ever think this.
But sometimes we see too much of, you know, one of these draft prospects, Matt. And you know, Deshaun Watson, the player, we saw too much of him, and it felt like we love the guy that we don't see, like Daniel Jones, Mitchell Trubisky. We love the mystery here instead of what's right in front of us.
Without a doubt, I call it prospect fatigue. I can remember an NFL general manager telling me, Nick Bosa's not that good. I was like, you're insane, man. Like, it's just, you're just looking at the fact that we've seen him play for 3 years. Nick Bosa's one of the best pass rushing prospects ever, but we get to this point of the cycle where we're all a little bored. We all want that tweet that's going to get a lot of clicks. We all want to, you know, hit the scroll on the bottom of the screen with our takes. Instead of, I wish there was this moment where we could just catch our breaths and say, okay, where were we December 31st on these guys? And unless something happened in terms of injury or off field, or they show up to their pro day and just they're 20 pounds overweight and can't run, let's go back to where we were December 31st, who was actually good at playing football. But you're right. We want the Kyler Murray, who, you know, the one-year guy. We want Mitchell Trubisky instead of Deshaun Watson beat Alabama single-handedly. Patrick Mahomes on a very bad Texas Tech team made them competitive in the Big 12. Those are the things and why I look at Justin Fields of, we've seen you do it for 3 years. And even this year, he threw 6 picks. Some of that was, you know, his offensive line wasn't very good. Some of it was on him. Go back last year, he didn't throw a pick, I don't believe, until the end of the season. So it's not that he's this turnover-laden quarterback. He was a very conservative passer. It does feel like the collective draft media this year has decided Justin Fields is the guy they're going to be down on.
He's Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft contributor. What happens now leading up to the draft that may change what happens with the draft order?
You know, I think the biggest thing would be, like you mentioned, Deshaun Watson is off the table right now. That there's not going to be a trade there. I think the Sam Darnold being moved could affect the draft order, but it feels like we're locked in, which I know the bosses don't like, right? Because there's no drama and injury. Trevor Lawrence is going to go first. Zach Wilson's going to go second. It feels like Mac Jones goes third. And then you're on the clock at four. So you're an hour into the draft before you're even like, oh, I wonder what the Falcons will do. And so unless Atlanta trades out of that spot, there might be a little intrigue there. But, you know, Sam Darnold being traded could provide some clarity. It feels like the Russell Wilson stuff, unless he comes back on your show and talks again and you know, gets himself back on the trade market. It feels like those types of things have died down where we're really starting to settle into knowing what teams want. Even, you know, the rumors that Joe Burrow is really advocating for Jamar Chase, his former teammate, their pro day is today at LSU. You know, even that you're starting to say, okay, like picks 1 through 5, you would feel pretty good about your mock draft right now.
The best player in this draft, or best players, give me 3, regardless of position.
Yeah, it's Trevor Lawrence. He is the best player in this draft. And I love that we've just stopped talking about him because it's accepted. He's going to go first. He's great. Let's move on. I think Jamar Chase is second. Again, the LSU Pro Days today. We haven't seen him play football in a year, which I think some people looked at the 170-pound Devontae Smith and started saying that he was somehow better than Jamar Chase. Jamar Chase is 40 pounds heavier. He's going to run faster in the 40. And he had 20 touchdowns as a sophomore with Joe Burrow. Third, I would go Kyle Pitts. And I don't even want to put a position on Kyle Pitts. He's an offensive weapon. He's just a pass catcher at Florida. Their pro day is today as well. I think he's going to run in the mid 4.4 range at 6'5", 245 pounds. He was unstoppable last year at Florida. He and Kyle Trask had a beautiful connection. And the ability to high point in the red zone to win over the top reminds me of Mike Evans. So I'm not even comparing this guy to a tight end. He's just someone who in the red zone could be a huge difference maker.
If I had last year's quarterbacks in with this year's quarterbacks, who would be the number one overall pick?
It would be closer than I think a lot of people realize, but I do think it would be Trevor Lawrence just because the 3 years that we've seen, you know, taking over the job from Kelly Bryant as a freshman, we've seen it sustained for a while. With Joe Burrow, there was even people last year like maybe Tua is the best quarterback. Maybe Justin Herbert is, because with Joe, it was the 1 year wonder, you know, that Joe Brady gets there, everything becomes perfect, and he has the best quarterback season I've ever seen in college football. But I do think Lawrence would be one, Burrow would be two. I think there the conversation gets interesting. The injury to Tua would probably put Zach Wilson ahead of him, might even put Justin Fields ahead of him. And then we would probably see Tua and Justin Herbert, who was overthought a lot, like I think Justin Fields is being overthought. But it's crazy. The league feels like it's changed in the last just year, where mobility is so much more valued now than it was even in March of 2020.
Yeah, but drop back quarterbacks have been winning Super Bowls.
Well, that's just Tom Brady, right? Right? I mean, so like Tom Brady's been winning Super Bowls. You know, otherwise it's Mahomes, it's Rodgers, it's Wilson. So, you know, we have to, you almost have to take
but
Brady
mobility
out of the
is,
equation.
Mobility is, you know, it's kind of in the eye of the beholder, because I like mobility. You know, I don't need to have somebody who is, I need you sliding in the pocket. I need you getting outside the pocket. You know, Mahomes isn't a fast guy. I mean,
right.
His
40
is like
mobility, yeah. Not a runner.
Yes.
Like being able to move to throw, not move to run. I'm with you on that. And I do think that, to some degree, that might hurt Justin Fields and Trey Lance, is that they were asked to run a decent amount, especially Justin Fields was at Georgia as a true freshman. Jake Fromm was the quarterback, and he would come in and run QB power. And so I think that is affecting their stock a little bit, where Zach Wilson moves to throw. Mac Jones moves to throw, even though I think 100 dropbacks was all he was pressured in his 17 starts. So there's not a big sample size of that, but it's not his fault that Alabama has first-rounders at every position on the offensive line.
Have you ever loved a quarterback and he didn't pan out? When's the last time that happened?
Yeah, that happens all the time in this job. I loved Teddy Bridgewater. I watched Teddy at Louisville. Was like, this is it. He's accurate. He's smart.
Tough.
And just let him, you know, let him work off reads on guys.
That's not a bad one, though, Matt, because I loved him, too. But, you know, without that injury, you know, I really – and I liked – the character of Teddy Bridgewater, too.
Same.
And he didn't have a good pro day, but I just said, you know, put on the tape when he played Miami. He gets hit right in the mouth, you know?
Exactly.
Like, that's right. What I want to know with these quarterbacks. What do you do when there's adversity?
No, that's a huge part. That's huge. That's one of my big keys into my scouting reports is adversity. And it's like, Justin Fields gets rocked by Clemson. Yeah. I would still be laying on the field crying if that happened. Zach Wilson, even, there's some adversity there. He had two injuries in college. They told him before the year, this is an open job. This job might not be yours next year. Yeah. So I think you can look at those things, and you want some adversity. But then again, like Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck, two of the greatest quarterback prospects ever, arguably no adversity. So you have to almost look for it. Sometimes Trevor Lawrence has been the number one pick probably since he picked up a football as a sophomore in high school. And, you know, there's some credit to that, too, that you've been in that spotlight since you were 16 years old and you've been a great leader. You've been a great captain on your team. He's already engaged. He's super mature. So there's something to be said for that, too.
Hypothetical. If Peyton Manning coming out of college, Andrew Luck coming out of college, and Trevor Lawrence coming out of college, and you got the first pick, I'm going to give you what you already know about Luck and Peyton. Yeah. And the unknown with Trevor Lawrence. Who would Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft contributor, take number one overall?
Oh, I'm taking Peyton Manning. You can't go against Peyton. Okay. Even in today's game, he's just too smart, carves up the field, and the accuracy at all levels. And I think Peyton was sneaky athletic early in his career. Deceptively fast, I think that's what we have to call it. But he could move around a little bit. It wasn't quite as bad as it was in the Denver days.
Okay, so I thought you might go Trevor Lawrence, you know, recency bias.
I'm not trying to get this clipped out in 5 years and people be like, this idiot actually thought Trevor Lawrence is better than Peyton Manning. I'm not doing that.
Well done, Matt. Well done. Hey, congrats on the job, and we'll be watching, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate it, Dan. Thank you.
That's Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft contributor. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk Live joining us on the program. Mike, let me start with Deshaun Watson. I said from the outset, I wasn't getting into the salacious details with Deshaun Watson. I was trying to look at it from a football perspective of when he'll play, if he'll play, where he'll play. And but, you know, I read something that you wrote yesterday, and you were kind of looking at both of these lawyers with what they're saying and how they're framing certain things here. And I thought it would be, you know, really beneficial to the audience to at least understand where we are right now and where you think we're going to be headed with Deshaun Watson.
Well, Dan, two courts in a situation like this, the court of law and the court of public opinion, and a lot has been playing out in the court of public opinion. The only thing that's played out in a court of law so far, 19 lawsuits filed. And the way that it works, the civil complaint gets filed. Once service is performed, and in this case, Rusty Harden, the lawyer for Deshaun Watson, accepting actual process, that starts the clock on a response. You can file an answer to the allegations, and there will be 19 of them in this case. You can file a motion in response to the complaint. I won't be surprised if there isn't some type of an effort by Rusty Harden to challenge all of these complaints based upon the fact that they've been filed under a pseudonym. That has been one of the complaints we've seen publicly from Rusty Harden. And I'm not commenting on the accuracy of any of the allegations here. I'm talking about the legal mechanics. He could file a motion to dismiss, a motion for a more definite statement, something aimed at finding out who the individuals are who are making these claims, because he's complained about that tactic so many times in his public statements. So there could be a motion to dismiss on that basis. At some point, though, the battle is officially joined. The court sets a trial date, and it all moves forward with the discovery process, deposition testimony, people telling their versions under oath, documents being obtained, text messages, etc. Typically takes 18 months to 2 years in most jurisdictions for it to resolve. So barring a settlement, and I've advocated publicly repeatedly, the best thing for Deshaun Watson, have his reckoning, make this right, satisfy whatever concerns these individuals have and move on. Otherwise, it's going to hover over him, the Texans, and the league for 2 years, Dan.
Are the police involved?
Well, the criminal courts are not yet involved, and this is where it gets a little confusing. There was a social media post last night from Tony Busby, who represents all 19 of the plaintiffs, suggesting that he didn't go through with his vow to submit evidence to the Houston Police Department because he's got concerns that he ran for mayor and there may be some. It's the height of cynicism to suggest that there would be 19 individuals, 19, who have concerns that the law was violated and that those concerns would not properly be processed and handled by the Houston police because somebody doesn't like Tony Busby. And if that's the case, if there's any truth to that, then these 19 women should be represented by someone else if the lawyer is going to be an impediment to them getting justice in criminal court. Now, Dan, I'll say this. As it stands now, the very high bar of proof beyond a reasonable doubt that applies in criminal cases, I think it's difficult to satisfy that based upon the allegations we've seen and the evidence that seems to be out there, which comes down to one person's word against another's. But if you go forward with the civil cases, Deshaun Watson has a hell of a decision to make. If there's a possibility of prosecution and you get put under oath in the civil case, what are you going to do? You're going to invoke your right against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment? You're basically forfeiting the civil case if you do that. But if you talk and you get twisted in knots by an aggressive lawyer, you may give a prosecutor a roadmap for trying to put you behind bars. That's another reason why I say the best thing for him to do, find a way to get these cases resolved to the satisfaction of the individuals. Now, I'm not saying make it go away. I'm saying deal with it. Deal with it, resolve it. Otherwise, it can lead to all sorts of problems down the road.
If this was September, would Deshaun Watson be in uniform? Ooh, I thought Mike was giving it great thought there. Very dramatic pause there. So we lost Florio. So we'll try to get him back. I want to ask him one more question about Deshaun Watson, then the 17-game schedule. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Mike Florio trying to extend his airtime, and he's done a great job. So we bring Mike back on loan from Pro Football Talk Live. When I last left you, Mike, I thought I asked a really great question that made you pause, and apparently that was not the case. But if it's September, given what Deshaun Watson is going through right now, is Deshaun Watson in uniform in September?
Let me preface this by saying, Dan, that under the policies that the NFL has available to it, it can do whatever it wants. And precedent doesn't really matter. Every case is treated individually, and it's all driven by PR, personal conduct policy, commissioner exempt list. It's all about how does it make the NFL look. Most employers, vast majority, don't care what you do away from work. Think about that. All this conduct is away from the workplace, but the NFL and the NFL Players Association have agreed that these things that happen away from work can affect the way the players are viewed, the teams are viewed, the league is viewed, so discipline is available. Commissioner's exempt list, paid leave. I firmly believe that if these cases are still hovering when September rolls around, haven't been resolved, moving forward in the civil justice system, that the league will strongly consider putting Deshaun Watson on paid leave. And that would be the ultimate irony here. He's wanted out of Houston so badly, that may be his only financial lifeline this year, getting $10 million plus to not play while on paid leave. That $10 million is going to come in handy if he's defending what is now, Dan, according to the Houston Chronicle, 21 assault lawsuits that have been filed against him, and who knows how many more there will be.
Commissioner said we're going to have fans in the stands to start the season. Is that kind of across all platforms here, all teams, all states, that they're going to be able to have capacity?
I think it's wishful thinking in some states. Obviously, Texas, Florida, you're going to have full stadiums no matter what the status of the pandemic is. That's not a political comment. That's just a fact. Other states, they may be a little more hesitant. I think what the commissioner may be trying to do here, Dan, is speak it into existence in some of these states that may be less inclined to say full attendance is permitted. We got a long way to go before we get to September. We got a lot of progress we still need to make when it comes to the pandemic. Recently, the news hasn't been good. It fluctuates as more people get vaccinated, but 5 months is a lifetime as far as the pandemic is concerned. There's reason for optimism, but there's still a lot more that needs to be done. And specifically, you got to convince California, New York, Massachusetts, other state and local governments that it's okay not just to have some fans present, but to have a full capacity.
Your biggest concern with the 17-game schedule is?
I don't know that I have a concern per se, because the bottom line is the players voted for it. The league was determined to get it. They were going to get it. My biggest expectation is it's a stopover to 18. And it's just a matter of when the league makes the push for 18. Will it be when this current CBA expires? Will it be before that? One of the things about the new TV deals, Dan, the league has the ability to pull the plug on all of them 7 years in, a one-time out. I fully expect the league to take that out, and that's a spot where you can say, we have another weekend of games for you. We want more money for that. The gambling side of it has continued to grow. We think the rights are more valuable, and I think that proliferation of gambling. It's about 20 states now, 22 states. It's going to get to 30, 35, 40. I think the hard ceiling is 44, because there's only 44 states now that have lotteries. But once we get more and more states, more and more money, more and more revenue, more and more football, I think 18 is inevitable. They still want 18. They just decided that 17 is the easier sell for now.
Everybody get paid as far as the players go? Do you get an extra check with an extra game?
I think they hashed that all out, and it was so long ago, I have to go back and refresh my memory. They came up with a deal where you get an extra check at the rate you were supposed to make, although there may be a cap on that for some players. That would be unfair. I think the bottom line is you should get one more check at the same rate that you were already due to make for playing that extra game. And I think anything less than that would be patently unfair.
Talking to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live co-host. You know, this whole these pro days, and I know you don't, you know, do deep dives into these kind of things, but, you know, we're seeing this play out where San Francisco goes up and we assume they're taking Mac Jones, and then Mac Jones maybe didn't perform as well as he should have yesterday, and then Justin Fields plays or performs really well here. Is any of this going to matter when we get to the draft in less than a month?
I don't think it ultimately does. Now, the difference between this year and other years, Dan, there's no opportunity for the private workout where any concerns that a team may have could be alleviated. I remember in 2014, Teddy Bridgewater did his pro day workout without his gloves, and it was a disaster. Well, then the Vikings did a private workout with him, and he put the gloves on, and they fell in love with him. And so that was that. Problem solved. We're seeing guys do multiple pro day workouts this year, so coaches can come and watch what they do, like Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch yesterday in Tuscaloosa. And I don't read a whole lot into anything that happens. Sims and I were talking about it earlier today. On the overthrow that drew the flashback by Kyle Shanahan to Jimmy Garoppolo missing Emmanuel Sanders in Super Bowl 54. I mean, we don't know if the guy ran the route too slow, if he pulled up at the end, if he wasn't going to lay out and risk injuring himself trying to catch that ball. It wasn't a horrible, like, missed him by 20 yards overthrow. And if anything, you'd rather overthrow than underthrow. And if he underthrows it, the guy slows down and catches it. You say, hey, he completed a pass. In a game, you throw that ball, it's possibly going to be picked off by the safety.
Yeah, I know. We're told, reminded, don't read too much into these pro days. And then all of a sudden you start to see some of the New York media saying, should the Jets reconsider Zach Wilson at number two and maybe Justin Fields? Just based off him.
Yeah, but that Fields throw, he's running right to left, and he's throwing the ball in the direction he's running, and he puts his entire body into that throw. The Zach Wilson throw that got everyone fired up, he's going right to left, and he sends it back the other way with a flick of the wrist. That's why Sims has Wilson at number one on his board of quarterbacks, because he sees Mahomes and Rodgers in the things Wilson can do. Effortless flick of the wrist 60 yards down the field.
Yeah, it's called Mahomesian. I've coined the phrase Mahomesian throws.
I like that.
Okay.
I'll use that.
You can take it. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean,
thank you.
I'm John Stockton.
I don't have to send you something every time I say it?
No. But, you know, I just like John Stockton. I'll throw it to you. You can be Karl Malone.
But there's going to be a whole generation of kids, seriously, who have watched Patrick Mahomes. I mean, you know, what Michael Jordan did to basketball, Patrick Mahomes is going to do the quarterback position. There's going to be, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now, more and more guys who come into the NFL playing like Mahomes, and already here comes a guy, Zach Wilson, who can play like Mahomes. It's going to revolutionize the game when there are enough of those guys playing quarterback that's the kind of stuff we see. any body position, any arm angle, just these incredible throws where the ball just gets rifled down the field with a flick of the wrist. It's awesome. It's great for the future of the game.
Well, Mahomes is doing for quarterbacks what Steph Curry is doing for shooters. And Steph Curry, to me, has had the biggest impact on the NBA in a long time. Even bigger from the standpoint than Jordan, from that everybody thinks they can do what Steph Curry does. Nobody thought they could do what Jordan did. With Mahomes, these quarterbacks all think that they can do what Mahomes does, or they can at least try to do that. That what I think is, you know, the impact that these two are going to have on their respective sports.
That's right, because a certain percentage of the quarterbacks who try will realize they can do it. They'll practice it. They'll work on it. And then the next thing you know, you got another Patrick Mahomes and another Patrick Mahomes. And it bodes very well for the future of the sport. And Dan, you know, 5 years ago, I would have said there's no way in hell they're going to expand the NFL because there aren't enough quarterbacks. I think we're getting to the point where there's enough quarterbacks. And I'm telling you, once they get to 18 games, the next way you increase inventory for gambling purposes is to increase teams. Just wait for it. It's coming. 34, 36, they're going to start talking about it. And once they start talking about it, you know they've got a plan in place to do it.
Okay, but where are we expanding to?
Well, I think that the overseas markets need to be taken seriously. Two teams in London, maybe elsewhere. Peter King suggested last night a full division of four teams that would be international. And there's always a market or two in the U.S. You could drop a team in San Diego. You could drop a team in St. Louis, although St. Louis currently suing the NFL for a lot of money. They'd have to mend those fences first. And I've said for years the prospect of a second team in Chicago, I mean, they got two baseball teams, right? Why couldn't you put a second NFL team in Chicago? And so I just think that the push to have more football content that's televised with in-game betting, play-by-play betting, more, they'll find places to put teams.
Yeah, they got to get one good team in Chicago, and then I think that you can expand that, Mike.
So it would be the expansion team.
Yeah.
They haven't had two good teams in New York for a decade. Well, look at it. The Jets haven't done anything, and the Giants, since they won the Super Bowl 10 years ago, have been to the playoffs one time. So
we suggested they merge. We thought that maybe if they merged, they might be a playoff team.
But you know what? Hey, Zach, if they don't screw up this Zach Wilson thing, the Jets may finally have their Joe Namath all these years later.
Thank you, Mike, as always.
Thanks, Dan. Sorry about the technical issues, buddy.
That's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.